Morning.
Get double dose here. That's the first time I get to fill the pulpit here with Don with us. So if things go really badly, he'll just step in and he can make some sense of my slides. Well, if it's okay with you, this week and next, I'd like to get a little bit autobiographical. I'd like to share a little bit about myself and some of the things that make me who I am, for better or worse. Part of this is to help you to get to know me a little better. I'm hoping to be here a good long while, and so I might as well let you know what you might be in for. And another part of this is to help me to get to know myself a little better and what I can be with God's help. I believe that good preaching is a journey shared by the preacher and the congregation. One of these days I hope to do some good preaching. My goal is to bring you along with me in my discovery of a text or an idea, so that you can discover it with me. I try to share with you the new things that I'm learning and studying, rather than simply teaching you what I already know, because that's a series that would end far faster than I probably want to calculate. I'm just trying to go off what I already know. And right now in my studies, I've been looking to take inventory of some of my blind spots. And some of those areas that have either been neglected or simply poorly done for a long time. I've been trying to identify some of these so I can figure out where they came from and what I can do about them so I can be better for myself, for God, and for you. So that brings me to two words that I too often struggle with when it comes to preaching. So what? Have you ever had a piece of information or trivia that you found really cool? And you think it's just so neat. And then you share it with someone, and they are so completely underwhelmed that they figure there must be something more to it. So what? Did you know that before the 1960s, the bananas sold in stores were an entirely different species than today? A fungus wiped out the worldwide supply of those bananas, causing the switch to the current variety. And a similar fungus has begun attacking that variety sometime in the last 10 years. So what are you telling me? Right, Gary was there with the so what? Should I be buying more bananas or fewer? I just thought it was interesting. That's all. Did you know that President Taft was so big that he got stuck in the bathtub at the White House? That's probably a little more known. So what are you trying to say? Are you calling me fat? Right? Sometimes we respond to these things without the so what in different ways. We want more. Sometimes we really feel like we need the so what. We get tired sometimes of facts and statistics and trivia, and we find ourselves saying, so what? Either tell me something that really matters, or I'm done listening. You been there? And I think that listening to a sermon is probably one of those times. Right? If you're not going to say something, what are we here for? Right? We sit back and we say, all right, fella, you got 20 minutes, 30 tops. And you better have something to say. I got all dressed up for this. What you got? A sermon is supposed to have that so what. What do we do with the information we're given? How should it affect our lives? How can we use it in our own walks? So what? And the problem for me is that my other job doesn't always work that way. If you don't know, I teach Bible at Rochester College, adjunct faculty, and it's an academic world. I don't say that as a negative, as some do. It's not a negative, but it's different. There are different expectations in the academic world than there are in the pulpit. For my work at the college, I can write page after page, breaking down a text, analyzing it, citing what others have done, and otherwise explaining what a text says without anyone ever asking me, "So what?" In fact, when I was writing my master's thesis, I decided that it needed a final chapter that dealt with the "so what" of the Old Testament theology work that I've been doing. And I can still remember how incredibly uninterested my advisory panel was with that last chapter. They didn't mind that I put it in there. They just didn't see the need. The previous chapters, I turned it in, and there's a huge response, and we work out all these different issues. Last chapter, the "so what? What can the church do with this?" That's nice. Very few comments. It's a different world. So when I started preaching, I sometimes struggled with getting out of that academic mode and finding the "so what." I have a good friend who was very, very willing to help me realize that when I forgot the "so what." He would tell me at times after I finished preaching, said, "Chase, that was a paper. Next time a sermon would be nice." We need that "so what." And I still miss that mark sometimes. Where is that "so what"? Which brings me to today's text. I figured we'd eventually get to it, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 1 has a message that is at the same time one of my favorite ideas in Paul's writings, and also one that I have repeatedly failed to teach a useful lesson about, not for lack of trying. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, "I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate." Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. If you come to the cross demanding signs, you'll find a stumbling block in your way. And if you come looking for wisdom, you'll find yourself walking away muttering about its foolishness. And yet this cross is the very power of God to those of us being saved. That's a cool message. I think so. It brings out this outrageous nature of this thing that we've talked about for so long that we can sometimes miss. A crucified Messiah doesn't make a whole lot of sense on the face of it. Where is the logic in looking at a dead man and declaring him the victor? You can understand why some people say what they do. He saved others, but he can't save himself. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand in his side, I will not believe it. It's a hard idea to grasp, the crucified Savior. A stumbling block. Foolishness. In recent years, I don't know if you've heard about this, of a movement of people who say it makes just as much sense to talk about a flying spaghetti monster as being the creator of the world as it does any of the stuff in the Bible. I would disagree. Just put me on the record for that. But you can see the difficulty in grasping the idea of the cross. Foolishness. But this text tells us that we only see it this way if we're using human wisdom. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. We can't understand it if we're trying to control it. We are too limited to fully comprehend the things that God is doing and the things that God has done. That's why he gets to be God. We aren't qualified for the job. And yet we try to do that anyway. I love this text. I love the way that it takes the things that were important to both the Jews and the Greeks, signs and wisdom, and turns them on their head. I love that it demonstrates the uneven relationship between God and humans, and that we get the better end of that deal, by far. I love that it challenges our perspective by making us take a step back and realize what an unlikely and an incredible thing happened at the cross. And it makes for really fun lesson titles like Dare to be Stupid. You can have fun with that. And that's why it's so frustrating that so often when I've tried to teach this text, I've come away lacking an answer to that all-important so what question. You know, it makes for a really nice test question. Here we go. True or false? 1 Corinthians says the message of the cross is foolishness. True. Thank you. Somebody gets an A for the day. And too often that's about as far as I take it. Here's a cool text. Here's what you need to know for the test. So this week I sat down determined to find the so what and to do this text justice. Here's what I came up with. As I see it, the key to understanding what we're supposed to do with 1 Corinthians chapter 1 is not in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. It's found in chapter 2. And so it was with me, brothers and sisters. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I came to you in weakness with great fear and trembling. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. The cross is foolishness to those seeking wisdom, and a stumbling block to those seeking strength. And how does it make any sense to think that the way to properly teach this passage is by trying to have greater wisdom. My problem is that I think I've been missing that point. I've piled up words to explain how 1 Corinthians 1 works just to make the same mistake that it warns about. Paul says, forget the words, seek the Spirit's power. And I'm going to admit that I like the safety of prepared words. Makes me feel comfortable. When I preach, I write a manuscript. Every word I've said up to now has been written down. That's the way I do it. Written down, crafted to say exactly what I think it should. And maybe that's been my problem with this one. Maybe I should follow Paul's lead, get outside my papers, and trust the Spirit for the so what. Maybe it's best that I speak to the power of God, to us who are being saved. So here we go. Every good thing that I have in my life has come from God. Has come because of what Jesus did at the cross. Mike said almost the same thing in prayer earlier. I have been in one church or another my whole life. Almost every job that I've had has been either in a church or Christian college or Christian camp or something where I'm surrounded by Christians. Am I in a bad spot for this mic? Every good thing in my life has come from Jesus. And sometimes I feel like that might put me at a disadvantage sometimes when talking to non-Christians. For one, truthfully, I don't know that many. It's a strange realization sometimes sitting in a class about how do we reach out to the unsaved around us that we spend our days with and say, well, I work with Christians. My friends are Christians. If it weren't for my kids making friends and me meeting their parents, I wouldn't have a lot of non-Christian people that I talk to. Also, because of my long Christian background, I sometimes feel like I have a hard time talking to non-Christians. Sometimes I feel like we're speaking a different language. Right? The things that we say that don't sound strange in this setting sound strange elsewhere. I remember in high school I was wearing a shirt I'm quite certain was a hand-me-down, because I think it was an MDYC shirt. On the back it said it had this long thing of, yes, as a matter of fact, I am, and it's got Bible toting, scripture quoting, blood bought, spirit taught, yada, 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 Christian. Thanks for asking, or something like that. Did I get that thought right? And I remember a friend of mine, we were in band together, we were getting stuff together, and he was reading the back of my shirt, and said, hey guys, Jesus bought Chase. Says it on his shirt. Jesus bought Chase. And, you know, they had a nice little laugh. I don't think he was trying to be mean about it. It was something that seemed strange to him. That wasn't the problem, Mike. sometimes the things that make perfect sense to us, because we've said them so many times and heard them so many times, don't make sense to those who haven't. It's not because they're stupid. The message of the gospel can be hard to take. It can be, difficult to work out. Death is supposed to be the end of a story, not the beginning. And so I can explain archaeological evidence, and I can talk about ancient eyewitnesses. I can talk about medical science found in the Old Testament. But when we get to the cross, how does a person go from being dead for 3 days to being alive? I don't have a logical answer for that other than that's what God can do. And so sometimes we miss when we're trying to just logic our way there. And some people want signs or proof. I had a co-worker at one of my non-Christian jobs, washing dishes, Ponderosa. And he told me when we were talking about church one time, he said, I'm not going to believe unless they discover the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail. And other than telling him you watch too much Indiana Jones, I couldn't produce that for him. And as much as I enjoy the narrative of Elijah on Mount Carmel, I'm pretty sure that if you set up a challenge between myself and someone of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster and say the first one of you to produce a miracle as proof is the winner here, that's probably going to end in a draw. I don't have signs and miracles. So it's hard for some people. So it brings me back to my initial statement. Every good thing in my life comes from Jesus. So what? So, if we have any chance of getting the message of the cross understood by somebody else, it has to come from the change that Jesus has made in us. We don't try to show how smart we are. We try to show Jesus and how the cross has made us forever different. We don't seek to win debates. We seek to win souls for Jesus. We preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks. But to those of us who are called by God, Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. If I need to look foolish to someone to bring people to Jesus, then so be it. If the price for saving someone is to look stupid, I'll take that trade-off. I'll dare to be stupid. Glory and power and honor and praise to the God who uses the stupid things of the world to shame the wise and to save the lost. If this morning you want to share something of your story, if this morning you need prayers because you have been trying to find the wisdom and find the strength and it hasn't been working, this is the time that we want to surround you with prayer. If this morning you're saying, I have been trying for the wisdom and strength of the world, and it's not cutting it, give me some of the foolishness of God, I need to be baptized, this is the time for that. If there's anything we can do, please come forward as we stand.
And veil through.